The Claude 3 model family by Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. Haiku is lightning fast and cost effective. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Learn more at anthropic.com/Claude.
Coming up on the Free For All, Shalini Ramachandran joins me to talk about Amazon and its big foot into live sports. Is that real? Is that going to really happen? Also, Thanksgiving, touch football. Shalini was a permanent quarterback. Can you believe it? Coming up, Free For All.
This is Free For All from the Wall Street Journal. Now, here's Jason Gay.
Hey, this is your friend Jason. And hey, look at us. Two Free For Alls in less than a week. We're back, or something like that. Thanksgiving, fast approaching here. It's Thursday. We're taping this on Tuesday. Maybe you're listening to it driving to your family Thanksgiving. Hopefully you're not stuck in traffic. Maybe you're waiting on an airport tarmac, having a miserable flight. I hope not. But a lot of talk about Thanksgiving being difficult this year, as if it wasn't difficult in prior years, but particularly turbulent given some of the raw emotions still lingering after the election. Joining me in the studio to talk about some fascinating media stuff is Shalini Ramachandran from the Wall Street Journal's media desk. Shalini, welcome.
Thank you.
What are your Thanksgiving plans?
Going to New Jersey with the mother-in-law and the family.
This is
the
in-laws. These are your new, officially your new in-laws.
Officially the new ones, yes. And
but you've known them for a while?
Yeah.
You didn't just elope and this isn't the first time you're meeting them?
No,
like
that.
Okay. And you got married when?
Last year, August 2015.
Oh, well, why do I think this was recent history? Okay, so this is not even, like, new news. What am I talking about here? Okay, so Thanksgiving. Now, are you on the hook for anything, or you just show up?
Nope, I'm on the hook. I made this Indian-ish stew,
okay.
And we're all vegetarian, so no turkeys there.
No way!
No turkeys.
So that is amazing.
All Indian food.
Does anyone take a stab at the tofu turkey or anything like that?
You know, it was tried, but tofu turkey is just terrible.
So my wife is vegetarian, but goes for the turkey on Thanksgiving. Does it make her a phony vegetarian? I mean, effectively, yeah, right?
She's not a purist.
Yeah, she is a very, very dedicated vegetarian, except on that Thursday where she has to have a little bit of turkey.
Understandable.
She doesn't go to town. But maybe she would like your Thanksgiving a lot more. Well, we're doing it at my brother's new apartment, and lots of family and lots of screaming children, so he'll regret that decision immediately. Politics in your family? Do people talk politics, or is this like a verboten topic at Thanksgiving?
People talk politics.
Yeah.
I'm sure that'll be a huge topic.
I think it's good. I think it's fine if people want to get into it at Thanksgiving. It shouldn't just be like talking about the weather and dull topics. I mean, come on, let's not be timid here, you know? Like, let's have it out.
Right. And if you disagree with somebody, you got to talk about it. I mean, otherwise, how are you going to have a conversation and actually
we
understand?
We just yell at each other on social media now.
Right.
This is the only way we communicate.
Or read only the news we want to read.
No, it is a funny thing because there have been a number of stories about, you know, how to manage or negotiate the dinner table at Thanksgiving, given, again, these sort of raw political emotions that are out there. But this is exactly what we should be doing, is having the conversation. Now, having the conversation after six glasses of wine might not be the greatest idea with some family members, but...
Right. You don't
We're supposed to be listening to each other, right? Isn't that the whole idea of what we learned from, you know, a couple weeks ago?
Maybe you can have it out over Thanksgiving football.
Yes. Well, that's
tackle
right.
Tackle each other.
Thank you. That was a beautiful segue, Shalini. Yes, we have the Thanksgiving Family Touch Football column, which arrives in the Journal on Wednesday, already up online at WSJ.com. And, yeah, so you can get out that pent-up aggression on Thanksgiving touch football. You play touch football at all?
I do, yes.
You do?
Yes.
Now, what is your skill set? Are you more of a...
Well, see, I grew up being all-time QB because I sucked so bad. So my brother would be on one team, dad on the other, and I was all-time QB. So both teams were equally bad.
This is interesting. So they decided that you weren't receiver material, so they would just use you as the quarterback. And did... all that, all those reps make you a better quarterback eventually?
I would say no. I mean, but it made me very empowered.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I was good. The most powerful player on both teams.
Absolutely. And, yeah. Who took it the most seriously in your family?
Probably my brother. My brother is insane about football. That is all he will watch. I mean, he's the kind of guy on Sunday, he has like 10 split screens.
No.
Yes,
oh.
That is him.
Oh, my God. How many actual TVs does he have? Or is it like a screen that's divided up into a bunch of things?
It's a screen divided up into a bunch of things.
Oh, my gosh. And who's his number one team?
The Falcons. We're from Atlanta.
Unbelievable. Well, the Falcons have been kind of, you know, up and down this year. So, you know,
yeah.
did they play on Thanksgiving this year? I don't believe so. It's always the Lions.
Yeah.
I need to look more at the schedule. But those games, I always fall asleep in them. You have to be on methamphetamine to stay awake for football on Thanksgiving Day.
Right.
I can't imagine. But, Shalini, you're here because in a sports-related development, you had this news story in the journal, which is both a scoop but really fascinating for people who care about sports and have been speculating about this possibility for a while. But you have a story outlining Amazon's basically soliciting around the sports world, trying to collect inventory to start airing live sports on Amazon. And, you know, again, this is something that's been speculated about for a while, the idea of a digital company like a Amazon or Apple or Google or Facebook or, you know, Twitter's obviously gotten into it with football.
Right.
How far have they gotten, and what's sort of the new and interesting thing here?
So it was kind of started to be speculated that they'd be interested in this when they hired a head of sports in March.
Yeah.
And, you know, people saw that and were like, this is interesting, because Netflix, as we know, they've been pretty out there saying, we don't want to put live sports in.
Netflix, I didn't know that. So
yeah.
Netflix, have they given a reason for
that?
Yeah,
mainly because they say that we're an on-demand platform. People want to watch sports live.
Oh, and that's interesting.
When we put a bunch of money into a house of cards or something, that means for years and years and years, people will watch it.
Yeah.
But, you know, after you have a game on, how many people are going to watch it?
That's
so
really interesting.
Is it something that, is it a good enough investment for an on-demand platform?
Yeah.
And Amazon obviously thinks yes. And they hired this guy, Jim DiLorenzo, a former Sports Illustrated executive, and they also hired a few others, like Sunil Dave, who is a former Dish Network executive, a satellite guy who was negotiating in sports networks. And so there started to be some sense, okay, they're poking around. But now it's become clear they've pretty much canvassed every major league. They've canvassed every college conference, World Surf League.
Yes.
They've gone everywhere, National Lacrosse League, and they're interested in getting any and all live game rights because they're interested in creating sort of a premium sports package that would be offered alongside a Prime membership. And it's interesting that, it's an interesting time to do this because they might be able to get in on the long tail first, the smaller sports, and then, we wrote in our story that, you know, Amazon execs clearly believe that they have the firepower and the willingness to bid for the major exclusive sports rights coming up in 4 or 5 years.
Now, when you talk about the long tail of sort of the margin sports, I mean, this is kind of how ESPN began also many decades ago. They were running Aussie rules football and all sorts of obscurities before they ended up paying the big bucks for the big things. I mean, it took decades for them to get in there with the major leagues. So have they made any actual deals? What have they taken on so far?
So far, it's not clear that they've actually struck deals. I mean, there hasn't been anything announced. But we know that they did approach the NBA and ask for the League Pass, which is their out-of-market game package, exclusively, which is, you know, has similar overtones to sort of how DirecTV launched in 1994 with the Sunday Ticket package of afternoon football games. And that has been, you know, hugely successful for it and was very disruptive at the time and helped DirecTV gain a lot of subscribers. So Amazon execs are, you know, keenly aware that that is a model that really helps drive acquisition. And the kind of wild card in all this about Amazon is that they're not a company that is sort of married to the quarterly, you know, earnings report.
Yes.
You know, they're okay having thin profits and no profits sometimes.
Yes.
And, you know, they think in the long term. So
they don't have to make money on live sports, in fact. This is not necessary.
Right.
This can be a loss leader for them in the respect that if it just makes people have, you know, buy things from Amazon, create Amazon subscriptions, be Prime members, and so on, it's worth it to them. Is that fair to say?
Yes. And what was so interesting is, you know, in reporting out the story, the World Surf League is like becoming really, really popular with millennials, and and advertisers really like it because people are buying stuff.
Yeah.
You know, you can buy, and Amazon has this unique ability to target people, right? So they know that you
Oh, boy. Do I know that. Every time I go on, they target me with Lightning McQueen toys because I get them for my kids. Let's go back to the NBA thing, because the NBA said no, I believe, to the League Pass. What was Amazon's pitch? Because, you know, League Pass already does exist on an online platform. You can have it as an app. You can put it on your phone. You can watch any NBA game. What was Amazon's pitch to the NBA to say, you should go with us because why?
I think the pitch would be that, you know, they would obviously pay more for exclusive rights.
Right.
Exclusive rights are always way more expensive.
Right.
And so it would be really a money equation, I think, because most content providers would rather have a lot of different people paying a lot for their product as opposed to one it only being available on one platform. But, you know, things like the NFL Sunday Ticket have been hugely successful for both parties. So.
Is it also maybe a visibility thing in that, you know, I don't know how many people, you know, common casual consumers of sports even know what League Pass is, but they're Amazon subscribers, and if it's hitting them with ads every once in a while, that might be a higher vis situation for the NBA?
Right. No, it could be. And also the interesting thing is, so I have a colleague who sits next to me who's obsessed with lacrosse, and there are a few like sort of lacrosse, you know, streaming services and things like that, but there's nothing that really, you know, he didn't even know about the lacrosse streaming services that were out there because like who knows that?
Yeah.
But if Amazon had it and he bought lacrosse gear and said, hey, here's this lacrosse streaming service, you know, then he'd subscribe to that.
Good point. I mean, it is interesting. The streaming has gotten so good. You know, the equipment that we all now have on our phones and tablets and so forth, the days of like multiple buffering and so on are just kind of hopefully fading.
Right.
I mean, there are things like I follow bike racing, and there's a really marginal, at least in the U.S. sport, called cyclocross, which is primarily raced in Belgium, that the bike company Trek has decided that they're going to live stream men's and women's cyclocross races this winter. And, you know, they'll lose a few bucks on it. It costs them $10,000, $20,000 probably to get the rights for it, but they're going to, you know, live stream it on their website. And then, lo and behold, you know, you're on the Trek website and you can maybe go look at bikes or other things that you might want to buy from that company. They're using streaming as a way to draw people in as potential customers.
Right. And this kind of thing where it's a premium sports package potentially, that could help bring in customers to Prime. And, you know, actually, after we tweeted about it, so many people were like, oh my gosh, if Prime offered, you know, Major League Baseball games and this, that, and the other, I would totally, you know, cut cable. See, this is the other part of it. Right now, sports is the glue holding the pay TV bundle together. You heard ESPN's president, John Skipper, say that a million times. And, you know, that it is what you can't find premium live sports anywhere but cable and broadcast outlets. And if there's another place that starts to have that, you could draw people away.
Well, I mean, just to put yourself in the room, you know, and theorize here, is maybe some of the NBA opposition that, you know, they have their partners on the other side of these deals, ESPN and Turner, which are paying literally billions for NBA rights, saying, no, 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 do not give this to Amazon, because then, you know, you're going to have more cable cutting.
Right. And I think that's a major thing that these leagues will have to navigate. I mean, on one hand, all of these sports executives are happy to have new tech entrants, you know, flashing their wallets at them. And that's a great thing for their potential rights in the bidding war. And also, you know, it's interesting. Right now, sports on TV is in a weird time. I mean, we've seen NFL ratings dip.
Yes.
And so there's...
But that was only because of the election.
Right. Everything's going to come back now.
Yeah, everything's roaring back. No, I mean, they've been... in a few instances, because of really good games, in fact, I think, gone up. And then in other cases, not shown the kind of post-election bump that the NFL was hoping for. Yeah, it is. It feels like the ground is moving underneath everybody. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, and I think that, and even the Olympics ratings were down. And I mean, of course, it was still profitable for, you know, NBC, Universal, and all that. But what does it mean that these big marquee events are starting to see ratings declines? And it's getting some people in TV land to start speculating, well, maybe is it worth paying these 50 to 60% increases when these big gigantic contracts come up? But, you know, maybe if you're Amazon and if you're, you don't make all your money from this and it's not your full business, but it could help you sell surfboards or lacrosse gear.
If like, you are a big kahuna and it is not your only thing, absolutely. What is available out there among the sort of big dogs? I mean, the NBA is locked up through, I think, the middle of next decade.
I think 2024.
What do we have coming up with the NFL and baseball and so on?
So with the NFL, there's the Twitter streaming deal that's coming up next year. Amazon did bid for that earlier this year in this cycle, didn't get it. And then there's also the CBS. I mean, that's so basically all of Thursday night football is coming up in some sort of chunks in the next couple of years. So there's the digital rights with the NFL split off, and then there's the TV rights, which are with CBS and NBC. So, you know, those are kind of the next couple of years coming up. So I guess if somebody came and offered massive enough money to get to ask for both TV and digital, I mean, potentially football might.
But only Thursday is the one that's sort of out there.
Thursday is the one that's out there. The others are tied up till 2021 and 2022.
This is interesting because, you know, there's a long conversation that's happening, and I'm one of the people who feels that maybe Thursday night football needs to go. That one of the things that's diluting the NFL ratings is, I mean, one of the things that's affecting the ratings is sort of like, you know, dilution. You just have too much content out there, and people need to feel that primetime football is a special thing. And if it's on three out of four nights during the regular season, and particularly if the games aren't that great, because you can only have so many good games, good matchups, that maybe something like that, you need to start thinking about rationing it. But to give the NFL credit, and not a lot of people give them credit for much, but they have used Thursday Night Football as a little bit of a new media laboratory and doing little interesting things. I mean, because they had to sort of have the chits to do that with the networks and so on.
Right.
And that's sort of what they're doing here, it sounds. They're not locking themselves into long-term traditional deals
that's
to experiment a little.
Even with the traditional networks, it was just two-year deal that they locked in, which is unusual for a big football contract. But so, you know, it's clear that there's appetite from these digital players, and I think the sport executives are interested in stoking that. But it's going to be probably early next decade when we start really seeing, you know, do these tech giants put their money into all of this?
Yes.
And I mean, I think in the meantime, for you know, Facebook, Twitter, Amazon, all of them are trying to go after the long tail and all the other pieces that you can get. You know, whether it's like Russian Hockey League or you know, EPL.
Right.
So I think everything else is kind of up for grabs.
We're going to take a quick break to hear from one of our sponsors, hopefully a very profitable sports television network. Or maybe not. Maybe it's just one of our wonderful sponsors. And we'll be right back here with Shalee talking sports media.
Hi, I'm Paul Vigna. If you do not subscribe to the Money Beat podcast, you are going to feel worse than a short seller on the day of a big rally. Go to iTunes and WSJ.com/podcasts. You want to sign up for this one.
WSJ Podcasts. Listen ambitiously. This is Free for All from the Wall Street Journal. Now, here's Jason Gay.
Here with Shalini Ramachandran of the Wall Street Journal talking sports media. Not to put you on the spot, but what do you know about DirecTV Now? DirecTV Now, was it announced it's coming up next week or something?
It's coming out soon.
And it's a big DirecTV. I have DirecTV. I'm like one of the five people in New York City that has DirecTV. It's a really random thing to have a satellite dish.
Do you live
dish.
In Manhattan? And you have
I live in Brooklyn.
Oh,
and
my
I have
gosh.
A satellite dish on my roof, literally. It just was the neighbors had it. I mean, the prior tenants had it. The dish was there. And I was like, eh.
So you're like one of the five people. Definitely.
Yeah, it's not not a common thing. And people really think it's fascinating that I have, you know, because I have Sunday Ticket and all that stuff. It's like I'm a sports bar or something.
Right.
But it's good for the job. But anyway, this is 100 or so channels, $30.
Yeah.
$30. Let me tell you something. My
35.
$35.
Yes.
Right. My DirecTV bill is not $35. I think I spend $35 a month just renting Frozen for my kids. But it doesn't have sports, or it doesn't have ESPN.
No, I think they say they're going to have everybody. And you're asking whether they have a deal with Disney, and I'm not quite remembering right at the second whether they do. But as I understand it, everybody's trying to get in that bundle.
Okay.
And I think they will have everyone. Now, the bit of speculation that's been out there by some media CEO types is that, well, we don't know whether they'll have all the local broadcast networks.
Okay.
So you might, if you're not in the, like CBS, NBC, ABC, Fox, they all own some stations.
Yeah.
And then there are a bunch of affiliates, right, for each of those.
Okay.
And so you may not, if you're in a market where it's not owned by CBS, you might not have the local CBS feed. But that's similar to other,
and
you
what
know,
kind
online
of frustration
sites.
Is there out there? Let me tell you about DirecTV. One thing that we do not get, and it makes my wife so sad, and I shouldn't even admit this because Pat Kiernan is a very nice colleague to me. We don't get New York One. You don't get New York One if you have DirecTV. And my wife considers New York One the pulse of the city.
Oh, that's
so interesting. We don't have that. It's very frustrating. You know, it's sort of a Time Warner product, isn't it?
Owned by Time Warner Cable.
Time Warner Cable.
One of the few things that people like about Time Warner Cable, yet they don't. Most people don't know that New York One was owned by Time Warner Cable.
Right, but also, what I'm curious about is how much will that impact people's, how much does that impact the desirability for something like DirecTV? Now, because you're saying, okay, maybe you're not going to get the local feed. You're not going to get Chuck Scarborough giving the 11 o'clock news or something like that.
Right.
Does that turn people away? Or do just soulless millennials not care about their local news?
See, being a soulless millennial, I don't watch much local news. So, you know, I think if it's directed towards millennials, probably that's not going to be much of an issue.
Yeah.
But I think what would be an issue is if there's not that much on-demand content, and that's still to be seen. Because what happened with Dish's Sling when it launched, which is another sort of over-the-top.
Oh, so there's not a lot of there's not a lot of on-demand content on DirecTV now, so like...
Well, we don't know. Okay, we don't know what it's going to look like.
Okay.
I mean, they may have a ton of it, but, you know, Dish and DirecTV, historically, because they're satellite companies, they have less capacity than the cable companies to have gigantic video on demand servers. But over time,
is that like an actual technology bandwidth issue?
It was for a long time, but then they started figuring out ways to get the satellite to beam down stuff to your box.
And
So I think they've built up VOD over the last several years, but it's not as big as if you had Comcast.
Yeah.
And had this massive on demand library with them.
$35 feels like a nice price point.
It does.
But it feels like it's not far away from becoming $50.
Yeah, and also there's the other factor here, which is that AT&T is trying to get through a merger with Time Warner.
Yes.
And so if that, and just to be clear, there's Time Warner Cable, which was bought by Charter, which is a cable company.
Right.
And there's Time Warner, which is the media company that owns like CNN, HBO, TNT, and all that.
So presumably they'd want to figure out a way to, you know, sweeten that pot with throwing in HBO, which they're not going to do that for free to get people to do direct, or maybe they would. Who knows?
Well, it's not inconceivable because there are a lot of operators that give offers of like 6 months free HBO or something. But what I'm saying is the price of $35 looks very nice to regulators.
Yeah.
And it seems very consumer friendly, but who knows in like 3 years or 4 years? I mean, these prices always go up.
I want to ask you about a story from overseas that I saw yesterday. Overseas. Sounds so quaint. In the UK, that Sky Broadcasting came out this week and said, we are going to dial back on sports spending, which seems like an interesting development when you consider all the stuff we were talking about in the top of the podcast about networks and the value of sports. That here you have Sky, which, tentacly has some sort of relationship to the Wall Street Journal and News Corporation, but neither you or I are privileged with any of that information, that's for sure. Sort of saying, okay, well, maybe, you know, we're not going to go as crazy as we did buying soccer and international sport and so on. Any sort of feeling of this is what's to come over here?
A little bit, because you've seen some of the networks here to say, like, we don't want these rights. These didn't perform as well for us. We'll let them go to somebody else.
Yeah, or we'll split them.
Right. And so, like, you know, you saw that with NASCAR and with the English Premier League rights.
Yeah.
So I think networks are trying to figure out what works the best for us.
Yeah.
And, they have a lot of pressures that they're facing right now. Cord cuttings happening, cord shaving. People or downgrading to cheaper packages. So they have to say, okay, are these gigantic fixed costs for this sport, are they worth it?
But the other thing that this story that I read, and I wish I could remember where it was, Awful Announcing, the media blog, had a post about it, which was fascinating, but I can't remember where the original story came from. But it said that in addition to the cord cutting that was happening, there's a behavioral belief that millennials aren't actually sitting down and watching an entire sports contest, that they're content to follow it on their devices. And that wasn't explicit in the story. So I don't believe what they meant was like watching it all unfold on their screen. It was like getting updates and watching Twitter highlights and so on, that there's this kind of like atomized way that you can now follow sports, which is, I have to say, you know, as somebody who can't watch everything all the time and, you know, is running around with children and so on, it's not that unsatisfying. Like, if I can't, you know, I went to Wisconsin and Wisconsin Badgers are playing at noon on a Saturday. It's like, I can't, like, do that, man. Like, I got to get out there and do stuff with my kids. But if I can follow along on, you know, ESPN.com and then Twitter will give me any touchdown highlight within seconds of it happening, it's not the worst way to go about the day. Now, it's obviously less preferable to watching it alone, but if there's a whole culture of watching sports that is not rooted to the watching the actual darn broadcast, that's an evolutionary change that's very aggressive and is going to really change things.
Absolutely. I think, and I've seen that just even among my friends.
Yeah.
Like, you know, when you kind of feel like you can multitask instead of having to be sitting there watching the TV, and you can, you know, be somewhere else and following the highlights or even your fantasy highlights. Because really, most people, most millennials, I feel like, who are obsessed with sports care about their fantasy. And if they just, you know, follow it on their fantasy apps, then maybe they don't actually need to watch the games where each of those players are playing.
Absolutely. And they're getting real-time updates and so on. And the insidious thing about this is that what is really driving prices for sports rights is not just volume of audience, it's demo. And it's the 18 to 34 age bracket specifically, which advertisers covet because they're incredibly hard to reach.
Right.
And that sports was something that reliably promised this audience.
And young men.
And if that audience of young 18 to 34-year-old men deemed so desirable, if that audience is starting to dwindle because of technology, I mean, these things seem to be happening a lot faster. I mean, I remember we were having these conversations, you and I, a year and a half ago, where we'd say, like, you know, 10 years from now. And I feel like they're happening, like, within 18 to 36 months now. They're happening pretty quickly.
Right. But I guess, like, we're seeing these changes among people that we know and people that we see. But in the grand scheme, there is still the whole lots of people still pay for cable TV. And it's still,
I agree.
You know,
But don't you hear... But do you feel like it's similar to like the way people talk about newspapers? And I mean, I see a lot of parallels in that, okay, there's always going to be a print reader, somebody who likes to get a print paper, and they're going to open it up in the morning. They like that, and it's an incredible experience, and I encourage anyone to do it. It's a really good thing. Makes you smarter. But that is a behavior that's in decline. And in the same way, you can't just sort of, I mean, like, you can't sort of like go into some sort of, you know, not to use our football terms here, Shalene, but like, you know, prevent defense of just being like, okay, well, let's just hang on to these people as long as you can. You have to sort of try to go where they are.
Right.
And our network's going to be able to do that.
Yeah. I mean, I just know from my husband is really into sports, but he rarely watches it. And it's not really because...
But think of how crazy that sounds,
yeah.
Right?
He follows things online and he follows his fantasy teams, but I rarely see him watch it on our TV set.
That's so interesting.
And I think about maybe we should just cancel our cable subscription, but because I cover cable TV...
nice write-off, yeah.
Right. I need to kind of be watching it and know what's up. But, you know, if we didn't, it would be something that we could dispense with and save some money.
Not only... do you not have to watch it nonstop? But if you're monitoring it, and I don't know what he's into. Is he into football?
Football, basketball, a little bit of NCAA.
Right. So he can monitor it to the point where, like, oh, my God, this game is insane, and then sit down and watch it.
Yes.
So I'll just watch the last fourth quarter or so on, something like that. So, like, you're not even getting the audience for the entirety. People can know they can just dip in at the last minute and
right.
sample.
And this was the interesting thing. just on a total tangent, but about the presidential debates too, that it was actually more fun sometimes to watch Twitter than to actually, like, you know, be paying attention to debate. And you kind of wanted to have Twitter up and see what the snarks were saying about even both sides.
Well, it's interesting, right? Because when Twitter started doing the Thursday Night Football, I have to say that, like, it felt to me, I mean, we were sort of made fun of Thursday Night Football, and it is crappy content usually, but the technology of it, I felt, was like it reached this level of just beautiful brainlessness. You just turn on Twitter and bang, there it is on your phone. And the stream was crisp and clear and never buffered. It was just great. Right. No problems. And I said to myself, well, this is it, man. This is what you want, because, like, now you have the comments. And so Twitter was like doing this curated feed of, like, you know, sports people. And it was pretty banal. It didn't have anything really fun. But I was like, well, it wouldn't be that hard to give people the option of curating your feed and, like, having your friends, and then you could have your text messages streaming in from friends, like, making fun of whether it's the debate or whatnot. And, like, how fun would that experience be? And, like, I mean, people talk to you about this stuff all the time, I'm sure, like, you know, making the second screen the first screen experience, right, and so on. But what I wonder, and what I want to curious what you think, like, is that a sort of an old guy way of thinking, and that there was always going to be a second screen, like the, just, you know, millennials' eyes and the attention span and our ability to sort of, like, do three things at once. It's different for younger people, and they're not looking to, like, combine it all on one giant screen in the room.
I think that's probably right, actually, because you're looking at your second screen when you're kind of bored of something that's on the first screen.
Yeah.
And you're, you know, maybe an ad is on, maybe it's like a boring part of the game, or, you know, the moderator at the debate's talking. Like, and then you're saying, okay, what are people saying? And it's, if we're on the first screen, it wouldn't be, you know, a beautiful distraction. It would just sort of be like there with all the other stuff that's happening and maybe missed.
Do you think that social media is killing group views? Viewing. You know, you think about, like, you've probably been invited to a Super Bowl party or an Oscar party or two in your life, and, like, you know, part of the fun is being in a room of people making snarky comments about everything, and now you don't have to do that. It's right there on your phone. Like, some of the funniest and even funnier people, and then some really brilliant people who are coming to it for professional expertise, they're all there. And so what's the point? You don't need to, you can just do it in your sweatpants at home with your own food.
Or you might be with a bunch of friends all looking at your own phones and the TVs.
I guess that's true, too, which is somehow a little melancholy.
Right.
I mean, I had a funny experience with the Chicago Cubs Game 7 World Series game. I went to Chicago for Game 7 instead of going to Cleveland, where the game was actually played. I went to Chicago, went to Wrigley Field, because I wanted to be around fans when maybe Chicago won or maybe they lost in a terrible way. And over the course of the night, it kind of looked like it was going in both directions. But one of the things that was amazing was that, you know, early in the game, the Cubs were ahead. Thousands and thousands and thousands of people started rushing into Wrigley Field to be there when the Cubs actually clinched Game 7. And then Cleveland tied the game, and everyone panicked, and they started walking around the neighborhood trying to find windows through which they could watch the game.
Oh, that's
and it was like something out of, like, the 1950s. People were walking up and down these streets around the ballpark. You know, the bars were full. You couldn't get into the bars. So they were, in some cases, literally standing in people's front yards, where the neighbors were nice enough to not draw the curtain so they could watch the game through the window. And in some cases, these people's front yards had not six or seven people, but, like, 300 people. I've never seen anything like it. And I just was thinking to myself, this is not going to happen again. Like, this is probably the last vestige of community viewing, because we're already at the point where everyone's going to have the ability to have it on their phone. The other part of this that's important, I guess, I should mention, is that the cell service was jammed up because there were so many people down there. So you couldn't actually watch it on your phone if you had the ability to.
That's like a sort of a beautiful, amazing moment. It was communal.
Well, you know, there was the writer Doris Kearns Goodwin wrote this book about the Brooklyn Dodgers. You know, she grew up in Brooklyn and talked about how you never had to, you always knew what the score of the Brooklyn Dodgers game was, because wherever you walked in Brooklyn, you could hear the radio, and the radio was on in every window and every storefront, and you could follow. And I was always like, yeah, I'm not sure if that really happened. This was definitely what it was like that night around Wrigley. So I believe it now. Sorry, Doris. Okay.
But yeah, basically, unless it's like some marquee event that's just
some super event, like a debate or like, right?
Unless it's like that, I just can't see you really wanting to go out of your house, go somewhere, and hang out with a bunch of people to see just like a regular Sunday afternoon game.
Let me ask you a question just a little bit from left field here, which is that, you know, we're having obviously a moment here after the election, and cable networks are trying to figure out what life is going to be like in the world of Donald Trump. What's been abundantly clear is that Donald Trump mania, pro and con, has been good for the cable TV business. And this was a business that, you know, didn't look very robust in most areas for a while. And all of a sudden, I mean, this is not the reason why we elect people to office, but I mean, is this good for people who are in the cable TV business in terms of just eye share and mind share and so on?
I mean, yes. Like, cable news had a ratings bonanza thanks to Trump. And I think that it's probably going to continue at least for some time, because there's still a lot of uncertainty about how he's going to govern and all the non-traditional ways he's going to go about building a cabinet. And so I think that they are benefiting from the fact that this was such a divisive election. And
he almost feels like a live event, like there's something happening all the time.
It was just so interesting. Typically, I think the picking of your transition team, picking of your cabinet is kind of like a boring, lame process.
Of course, yeah.
But it's become a reality show.
No, it's like Dancing
there's
with
like
the Stars,
a stakeout at Trump Tower with like a bunch of media. And I mean, this is partly the media creating it, right?
Yes.
And then it's partly, you know, the fact that it is fascinating. It is a show, and there are... It's the way he has a showmanship way about him.
Absolutely. And also, this is the one world he is really, truly fluent in. It's not clear if he's fluent in economic and international affairs, but it is definitely clear that he knows television as a form and is a proven success at it. You know, this is what he came from. And not only does he know the form, he knows all the people personally. He was on all their shows. He worked for most of them. I mean, when he called all these network executives to Trump Tower yesterday to have this, you know, from all reports, this off-the-record dressing down of all the cable companies for their what he perceived to be biased coverage of him, you know, he's effectively summoning them as their boss. That's how he sort of sees himself. He's not looking at them as their partner. He's saying, like, I know what my value is to you, and this is how it's going to be. It's
like a very weird, weird tone, because from looking at all the reports, it seemed as if somebody described it as a firing squad. Like, I don't think any president has really liked dealing with the press. And I think even there have been reports about how the Obama administration was pretty closed off to the press. And, but, you know, I think this is like a whole other level, like a public feud with the New York Times is going on between Trump and the Times. And so I think it's taken on a whole new level.
It has taken on a whole new level. And the thing on top of it is that he doesn't actually need the press to deliver a message, because what ends up happening is I think he wants it. I think he likes the validation of traditional media, and he seems to get his feelings hurt, you know, when he perceives bad coverage or biased coverage. But then he can just turn around to a Twitter account and fire off 140 characters and make a ripple of international news. And a lot of people have said this over the last couple of weeks, but you know, the dynamic changes once you assume that office. And what was once sort of a, you know, oh my gosh, what's he doing now kind of moment when he would say something crazy on Twitter has the potential to, you know, impact.
Make news cycles, like 48 hours.
Not just
news.
That, but affect, you know, the economy, you know, ripple the stock market and so on. What happens then? I wrote this morning on Twitter. I said, you know, there's that old, you know, toast / curse, you know, may you live in interesting times. Like, I would, I'd be okay about living in slightly less interesting times. I feel like every time I don't know how you feel.
It feels
like
we're in an earthquake constantly.
No, but I just, like, I turn on my phone in the morning and be like, what now?
Right.
And I'm like, is this going to happen for 4 years? Like, are we just every morning going to wake up and just like want to know what the heck happened? Like, is it like, or does it become like a soap opera where we become compulsively addicted to it? I feel like the campaign got to be that way.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, it was addictive reading all the news and the you know, what crazy thing was said now and then. And but I think that, you know, it's also going to be something that the media has to figure out. What do we cover? What do we not? How much importance do we give to this, that, and the other? So, you know, I think there's some talk about there, all the Hamilton tweets that Trump said, you know, basically, I guess, saying that the Hamilton actors for telling Mike Pence a message about, I guess, please govern for all of us, that type of thing, was offensive. And so he said that on Twitter, and that took over like a whole news cycle. And then some folks were saying, well, did that take away from coverage of the fact that he came to this $25 million settlement over the Trump University lawsuit?
Yeah.
And so there's a lot to think about as the media of like what to cover, what not to cover, and how much importance to give to this versus that.
And I also feel like, you know, we've been sort of trained professionally to sort of think like media talking about media, it's like, you know, how much does the public care about that? How much do we stand up our own butts? You know, we talk about that. But it really has become the story of our times because, again, everybody has access to become part of the media. Think about the Hamilton thing specifically. Pence goes, he is booed. It's not a anecdote you hear a day later. It is something you see through video clips sent to your phone from other, you know, people like yourself within seconds of it happening. Then when the cast makes its comment at the end, in addition to the fact that everybody has their phone out to record the moment, they are encouraged by the cast. There's actually the moment where the actor says, you know, take out your phone and, you know, post this because we want this message to be heard. We are so aware of our ability to participate in the current of news. It's just, again, these are really strange times. And, you know, we're battling over a lot of sort of the old sort of traditional pillars of media. But it's really important to acknowledge that we're all kind of part of it now. We're all capable of shaping news.
And one of the scarier parts of that is the fake news.
I know. We haven't even got into that part. That's a whole other conversation, which we have to have in the future. Everything that we have said on this podcast, we believe to be true. I believe.
Yes.
Yes? Everything that you write, you're not writing any fake news?
Nope. Not writing any fake news.
I will not write any fake news unless people want to read about Wisconsin winning the national championship in football. I'll write you that fake news story if you want. Shalini, give me a Jersey traffic tip for Thanksgiving for people who might be driving, getting in their car, going south.
Going to Jersey? Oh, geez. I don't even drive. I'm going to the New Jersey Transit.
So oh, you're taking the transit.
Can't help you with that.
Genius. Okay, so no turnpike for you.
No.
Okay, all right. I say stay off 95 after 9 a.m. All right, you don't want any part of the New Jersey Turnpike going south towards Baltimore, which is where my in-laws are. That is a long trip. True story, once we were marooned so much traffic on 95 on the way to Baltimore that we were sat in the car and watched Ghostbusters, the entire movie, on an iPad, just sitting in traffic.
Oh my gosh.
For 2 hours. This has been the free-for-all. I wish you all a happy and healthy, wonderful Thanksgiving, wherever you're going. Don't fight with the relatives too much. You'd love them. You know it. Just have a nice holiday. Listen to each other. It's America. It's turkey. And most of all, it's bad touch football. Thank you, Shalini. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Happy Thanksgiving. Bye-bye.
WSJ Podcasts. Listen ambitiously.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.